This is probably the proudest moment of my life because all you can hear is me go, well, there's a bird on my head now. And inside I'm like, holy, holy, get it off, get it off.
Just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch or, you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFins account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Wow, and unprotected. Planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Ah, nature's sexy. We need this place, so please respect it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Wild and Unprotected. On this week's show, we have two guests, not one, but two guests. We are talking to IFA Australia today. I want to welcome Dom and Josie from IFA Australia. Ladies, welcome to the show.
G'day.
G'day.
Welcome. So glad you guys are here and love the outfit choices.
Yes, thought we'd bring some Australia representation.
Yeah, this will be our first episode with a group out in Australia, so we're really happy. And how do you, is it g'day?
G'day.
Did I do that good enough?
G'day.
Well, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you guys on.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. So without further ado, let's just get right on into it. Dom, I'd like for you to get started. If you could tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got started with IFA.
Absolutely. So I was a journalist for a good 10 years and I was working for the National Newswire here in Australia. And I was covering the Black Summer bushfires, which I know would have made the news, well, did make the news globally. It was a real catastrophe. It was really heartbreaking to see. I was sent out to the field. And I guess what stuck in my mind the most was seeing all the dead animals, the carcasses of animals on the side of the road. And I just kind of thought that I could be doing much more with myself than reporting on it. Even though it's a really important job, I wanted to help more. So that was kind of the point where I realized that maybe it was it for me as a journalist and maybe I could find my purpose somewhere else. And then from the bushfires, I learned of the International Fund for Animal Welfare. Thanks to a superhero called Bear, who's one of our koala detection dogs. He was out in the field in the bushfires searching for koalas, so that we could rescue any that needed veterinary assistance. And through that story, I interviewed Josie. So it was my time at AAP that I met Josie and I learned about all the amazing stuff that IFA does. And I was just super inspired about the fact that they were actually on the ground doing the work instead of just talking about it. And that is what made me want to work for them. And 3 years later, here I am.
Oh, that's beautiful. Before we go further into introducing Josie, what is your role at IFA? I forgot to mention.
I am communications manager.
And she does a good job at it.
She's not bad.
I'm okay.
As your time as communications manager, you mentioned interviewing Josie. And Josie, this is a great time for you to kind of hop in and explain to the audience your background and how you got started.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to be showing my age here now. So I actually started with IFA in 1999, like the last century. So yeah, you can do the maths.
Age is just a number.
So I started young at heart. So I started out with IFA UK, based in London in 1999, and I joined as the fox hunting campaigning, obviously campaigning against fox hunting. And it was a really exciting time to join that campaign, because, you know, it's a long fought campaign, 100 years in the making. And I joined a really exciting time when it was actually, you know, we were getting some traction getting the public mobilization and the spotlight on the cruelty of that cruel sport. So I spent that 12 years in the UK office working on that campaign, and we actually got that legislation on the statute book, so that is outlawed in the UK now. And then about 12 years ago, I visited Australia, actually rekindled a relationship I had in the UK a few years back, and moved to Australia for a man, and I applied for a job. I applied for a job for Australia, and it was really good timing because they were currently looking for to hire a new position, which was a wildlife campaigner. And I applied not thinking I was going to get the job because I didn't know a huge amount about Australian wildlife, but I did know about campaigning. So and I got the job, and the rest is history. So I've been here for almost over 10 years now. I'm actually just become an official proud Aussie citizen.
Congrats on that.
So as Dom said, working on Australia has such an incredible array of unique wildlife, like 80% of which can only be found here. So it was like a huge learning curve for me. But the minute I, came across and met some of these animals in person, I just fell in love. And and I just wanted to do all I can to help protect our amazing wildlife. Koalas are the main one that we're working on, but there's so many species that are in trouble. And, koalas are kind of the poster child, the flagship species, so to speak. So by saving them and their habitat, we're in turn saving so many other animals too. So, and then we had the Black Summer bushfires that Dom, for instance, that's when I met Dom at the first instance, and she did an awesome job in telling our story. We were looking at how the koala population was impacted by the fires.
Yeah.
And koala populations have already been on a plummeting for the last 20 years, and the Black Summer bushfires were pretty much the final straw, hitting at the heart of core koala populations. So we did a report looking at the numbers, and that report showed that there was an immediate and significant risk of extinction. And that report formed the basis for a nomination for the an uplisting from vulnerable to endangered, which happened last year now. So that was a bit of a double-edged sword, because great on the one hand that, they have been recognised, their plight has been recognised, and they get that added protection. But we really shouldn't be in this position. They've gone from vulnerable to endangered in the space of 10 years since I've been here, basically. Yeah. And then, if we carry on the way we're going, they're going to be critically endangered in the next 10 years. So, so our job is trying to prevent that from happening. And our ultimate goal is to have them taken off the threatened species list altogether.
Yeah. I have a question on them moving from vulnerable to endangered. Does that change have a bigger impact on monetary backing because they move from vulnerable to endangered? Do you guys get more money for conservation, for research on the species to see what can be done? Or is that just kind of just a label?
Good one.
a bit of both. So yes, there is more awareness, there is more attention, there is more government funding. It's just a matter of, money. All the money in the world won't save koalas if we don't actually address that root cause of the main threat to koalas, which is habitat loss. So you can put money into, research and recovery, but if we don't address that that main threat, which basically us cutting down their trees, we're not going to save koalas. So yes, it's a good thing there is more attention and funding, but we really need to change the way we're going about things if we're going to really make a difference.
I think what shocked me too, and I think I think I got it from you when I interviewed you, that we have one of the worst deforestation hotspots for a developing country here in Australia, in New South Wales.
Either. Yeah, we're on the list, the top 10 list,
And that just blew my mind because you'd think that we'd be so much further ahead, especially trying to save such an iconic species that everyone knows about all across the world. And there's not much you can do to help koalas except save where they live. And that is just so critical. And that's just not something that is happening.
We hold a few infamous titles as Australia. We've also got hold the dubious title of having the world's worst mammal extinction rate. So that's not a very nice thing to.
I just thought the worst title that you guys had was the world's scariest big ass spiders.
We have those as well. We have probably the most amount of animals that want to kill you as well. Yeah, we've got lots of titles down under.
Hey, Koji, are you sure we want to go there?
Oh, I'm going. With or without you, I'm going.
To be fair, I'm not really. I think I've only ever seen one dangerous snake in my entire life here, and one dangerous spider. So
yeah, they avoid.
Yeah, humans. They don't go looking for you.
Generally,
that's what they. Yeah, they're trying to reel us in, so we go and step on a snake.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna have to pull out a huge insurance policy, so we're good to go on this trip, Koji.
Oh, you're sensible, guys. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Maybe not. I'll be like waist deep in the water somewhere.
I was being sarcastic.
I'll be fishing, risking it all. Ethan will be sitting on the beach.
Shocked.
Yeah.
I'll be surfing. I'll surf, or if there is racing out there, if there's some form of car racing, you probably catch me there.
Okay, we have plenty of that.
This might not make the podcast, but I am actually a pretty big fan of a driver out in Australia in, I believe, one of their pro series, Shane Van Gisbergen. I'm a big fan of him.
No, but we have actually just been out to visit Formula One driver Mark Webber's property over here.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so he lives on a property out here, and we recently took the detection dogs to look for koalas and found a koala on his property.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's a good connection there, but neither of us know much about.
No, I had no idea who he was when they told us.
Honestly, it's sad. The first thing that came to my mind with detection dogs, you know you live in the state when detection dog means drug detection dog.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah.
We have them too, just in our world. They always... like they're koala detection dogs.
They
sniff out poo, not drugs.
Yes. But the good thing about dogs is that detection dogs is that you can basically train them on any scent.
Yeah.
And they're like a library and you can just put in any scent to them. So yeah.
Well, that's a great segue into reeling us back into the topic and also bring koalas back to the forefront of the conversation. Detection dog. No, you're good. So these detection dogs, you said they are trained to scent. And of course, most detection dogs are, if not all of them. If they're to search for koalas, they're looking for eucalyptus smelled poop, correct?
Some are. So we partner with the University of Sunshine Coast Detection Dogs for Conservation Unit, and they have a team of dogs, and each one has a unique, different sort of skill, really. So some of them are trained to sniff out fresh koala poo, as you say, like the scent of eucalyptus. Some a bit older poo, and one very special dog called Bear, who you might have heard of. He has been specifically trained to detect live koalas, and that's by the scent of their fur. So the unit came to us about 8 years ago now, because they had the scat poo detection dogs, but they wanted to go a step further and see whether they could train a dog to detect live koalas, because that skill is incredibly useful in situations, in rescue situations, and proved itself to be incredibly useful in the bushfires. But it hadn't really been done before. And I4 was very interested in getting behind this idea. So we said, yes, we're up for it. And we put the call out. And the great thing about the unit is that they only train rescue dogs.
Yeah.
So, they're not breeding dogs specifically. They're actually rescuing dogs off death row, so to speak, to help wildlife. And often it's the dogs that make the worst pets
that make the best detection dogs.
So those kind of like high energy,
OCD.
Really, yeah, but OCD, yeah. Just want to play and work, and that's the same thing for them, really. So, Bear came along, and he was living in a you know, a flat, and he was literally eating the flat, and the owners just couldn't handle him. So they brought him along for testing, and the team tried him out, and, you know, within the first five minutes, they were convinced that he was the one. He just went from strength to strength. And we took him out in the bushfires, after the bushfires, not really sure what was going to happen. And he ended up finding over 100 koalas in that time. So that was just an incredible feat. And yeah, he starred in his own documentary, yeah. Bear Koala Hero.
Did you just say dogumentary?
I did, yeah, sorry. I like my puns here. But yeah, and he has Instagram, Bear the Koala Dog, if you want to follow him. And yeah, so he's become a bit of a superstar in his own right.
And Tom Hanks has tweeted about him. That's how pawsome he is. awesome. I think Leo DiCaprio. I'm not.
Yeah,
Leo. Yeah, yeah.
Here's a dog one. This is Bear. He was abandoned as a puppy due to his OCD, but quickly found a new life as a koala detection dog. As wildfires devastate Australia's east coast, Bear is doing his best to locate any injured or misplaced koalas. He's their unexpected savior and our 13th 1510. This is a Disney movie that must be made. The story of Bear, the koala detection dog. That's adorable. I like Bear.
So how many koalas has he detected now? Do you guys have an active count for him? Does he have a ticker somewhere?
Goodness, I could probably get those figures, but no, I mean, yeah, not off the top of my head, but, you know, in the hundreds, because, you know, he detected 100 just after the bushfires. And these are koalas that, they're incredibly hard to spot with the human eye, and detection dogs are so useful because dogs' sense of smell is like 10,000 times, you know, more sensitive than humans. So because koalas are so cryptic, and they, you know, they're tiny little balls of fluff, the size of a football, really.
And they camouflage up in the trees. I mean, I only saw my first wild one last year, and I've lived here for 30 years. So they're really hard to see.
Wow. If you look behind Josie, there's one on the picture frame behind her head, right?
There is, yeah.
Can hardly see them. That's how camouflage he is.
Yeah,
no, it's really and they're really high up, and they don't want to be seen, right? No, and they don't make any noise.
They don't make noises. They don't, yeah. But it's cool to see them work, because the dogs will, like, you'll see them run around, and you can see when they get a scent, and they just kind of keep going. And then they drop, and they lay at the bottom of a tree, and they just look at you, and they're like, hello, there's a koala up there. What are you doing? And we're all looking and trying to find it, and eventually we get there.
Man, we don't deserve dogs.
and they can smell what we can't see. But as Dom says, Bear indicates, or by, you know, going down to the ground, but he's only allowed to get his reward once the humans have spotted the koala and confirmed that sighting. And often that can take quite a while, even with like 10 humans around a tree trying to look at this koala. The dog's just like getting really frustrated.
He's like, hey, f***ers, it's right there. It's right there. I know it's there. Give me the damn treat.
I know. So, I think it must be quite frustrating for the dogs that we're so slow on the uptake. But so he's really been our secret weapon, really, and has saved the lives of so many koalas. And we'll go on to save many more.
Is he still active?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's got three buddies, Billy Jean and Austin.
Yeah.
And they're both koala poo sniffers. I think Billy Jean does the fresh poo and Austin does the older, possibly.
You got the trifecta there.
Yeah, we do. We are looking for a new one as well, a new dog to join the team.
Well, shit, if it means you move to Australia, I'll be a dog.
How's your sense of smell?
Not that good, that's for sure.
Not poo or drugs?
I think I would lose my lunch if I had to sniff poop, no matter the taste. So maybe I'm not a dog.
We also need you to run a lot.
Yes.
We cover a lot of distance.
Can't do that either. I might be out of luck.
I'm not sure if you'll make the grade. I'm sorry.
Yeah, dropping the ball. Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is.
Well, let's dive back into the koalas real quick and really talk about why, one, you know, we've hit on, you know, their poop smelling like eucalyptus. Why is that? And dive more into the animals.
Goodness, where to start with koalas? They're just, I learn something new every day about koalas. They're just such an incredible, like, cryptic and complex animal. Some like unique things about them. They actually have their own like unique individual fingerprints. I don't know if anyone knew that, but you know, just like chimpanzees and humans, they're one of the only animals that actually have unique fingerprints, which is amazing about them. And they're not bears.
No,
I'd like to clarify that.
Absolutely not.
They're not drop. Although the drop bears are a completely different thing over here. So beware of those when you come over here. But they're not bears. They're marsupials, which means that, you know, they have, their young is born very undeveloped. Mm-hmm. And then they spend a lot of their life, you know, early lives in the pouch. So they are marsupials. And they live on mainly a diet of eucalyptus leaves. Yep. Which is very toxic, and contrary to popular opinion, they don't spend all their time sleeping. They're actually resting, trying to basically digest this incredibly toxic diet that they're on.
And they poop a lot because they eat so
much.
They
poop a lot.
I think it's like 100 a day, right?
Yep, or even more.
A lot of poop.
And the poo smells of eucalyptus.
Because that's all they eat. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, it smells nice.
Yeah.
It's the only poo that we've smelt that's nice.
Yes, when you guys come out, we can take you and you can smell some.
Well, Ethan's not. It's not going to work for him. It's not going to work for him.
Unless you want another mess to clean up, I don't think I'll be sniffing any. I'll take the two of y'all's word for it, and I'll take Koji's word for it.
No, seriously, it smells nice. There's nothing nasty about it.
So they also get their primary source of hydration from eucalyptus, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the indigenous name for koala in Australia means sort of no drink. So they don't actually drink much water, although they have been more recently with all the heat and the fires, but they get their moisture through the leaves.
Yep,
moisture in the leaves.
Wow. One-stop shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But which is also a bit of a negative thing, because with climate change, they're one of the, you know, most vulnerable animals to climate change, because as the climate heats up the leaves, there's less moisture in the leaves, which means that they're really, you know, suffering and dehydrated. So they have to find other sources of moisture and nutrition. So that's a real concern.
And then obviously the same can be said for fires. If they burn down the eucalyptus trees, that's not just burning down their homes, but it's their source of food, their source of water. And same with habitat loss because of development and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's, it makes it pretty grim.
And habitat loss is kind of the primary issue that they're dealing with, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically the root cause of what's putting them into so much trouble. And the more we cut down the more of their trees, the more stress they get, the more susceptible they become to chlamydia, which is another big thing that impacts koalas here. It's just kind of a revolving circle. And unless we address that and stop, it's simple. Like, we just stop cutting down trees for our homes so that they can have homes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of policy and stuff to get through to make that happen.
So otherwise you would see more koalas wandering into kitchens and people's homes and yards, correct?
That does happen, yes. And it never used to. Not that I've noticed before, but I see it more and more now. And where I'm actually living at the moment, which is about an hour from Sydney, it is home to one of the last healthy populations, is that right?
Yep.
That is chlamydia free. in New South Wales. So it's super important. And they weren't affected by the bushfires. So they're like very important. But a massive development is coming through and has destroyed their homes. And you're seeing more and more in that area come into people's backyards, front yards. Then obviously they become more at risk of clashing with dogs and cats. And I just saw the other day when I was driving home, there was a sign on the road saying that just this year there's been over 20 koalas killed in that area from car hits, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's huge given like every individual koala at this point matters. Mm-hmm. And that's just in one area. So yeah, it's a big one.
So let's connect some dots here. You mentioned, you know, climate change and their habitat. With so much industrialization, not only, you know, I mean, on every continent, but specifically where you are, how are you seeing this industrialization and these big developments kind of start to, you know, show its ugly head? And what are some of the battles, you know, that you can kind of start to engage the community and spread awareness against some of these big developments and just, you know, like I said, spread awareness to the importance of this habitat for the species?
That's a really good question and a big question.
I'll give it to Josie.
Unfortunately, you know, koalas and humans are kind of battling for that real estate. We both want to live in the same place that's off subtropical to coastal areas. So there is that real competition for real estate. But it's proven that, you know, wildlife and humans can coexist and they can live together. It's just all about planning with wildlife in mind. So, you know, at IFOL, we're not anti-development. We are pro-wildlife, but we're pro-coexistence, really. Mm-hmm. So I think you just need to take into account when you're making these plans of how it's going to impact wildlife and koalas. So building in, for instance, road crossings and underpasses so wildlife can actually have safe passage across the landscape, making sure there are green spaces and corridors. I mean, who doesn't like green spaces? We all need them. And in that way, if we do that sensitively, that means that we can actually live with koalas and wildlife on our doorstep. And that's going to be a huge plus. At the moment when Dom was talking about this development, that's something that IFOR is actively campaigning on, making sure there are safe corridors and, you know, wildlife crossings for animals to survive. So it's not, I don't think we're asking for much.
No, it's not like we're saying one or the other. It's there are ways that we can work together and we can benefit both species. That needs to start to be considered in developments and government and at all levels of decision making.
Otherwise, we're just going to see their habitat become increasingly fragmented and them living in these sort of like pockets and mm-hmm. islands. And that means their genetic diversity is going to be limited and they don't have anywhere to move. And when they do want to move to another tree, they have to come down off the tree and travel and come into contact with humans and dogs and cars and all those things. So providing that connectivity, those sort of lifelines through the landscape so they can have that safe passage. That's the aim that we'd like mm-hmm. to work. And I know that it's an issue, you know, across the world with other different, mm-hmm. you know, wildlife, but Australia is definitely behind in that respect, particularly with the wildlife crossings. And, you know, we are on that top 10 list of deforestation hotspots. So we really need to get our shit together, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our environmental laws aren't strong enough. Yeah. And that's something else we're campaigning to make stronger, so that they're not working. Basically, they're not doing the job they were set out to do, which is protect the environment and wildlife. So we're calling for a complete overhaul of those environmental laws at the moment, because the way we're going, we're not going to have any wildlife left. You know, the only place we're going to see koalas are in zoos, and who wants that?
Mm-mm. Yeah, and this is the first time they're being reviewed. Those laws are being reviewed in 20 years. So it's huge. It's really like a once in a lifetime generation opportunity for us to have a say and to for just the general public to understand how important they are mm-hmm. and how important it is that we do change them and we do make it better for our wildlife and natural places, because if we don't, we might lose them.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. It's not something we really had written down, but I feel like that's really a compelling thing to talk about, is what does that look like when you go for an overhaul? I don't know if you guys know how long it might take, but is there, you know, a timeline that you guys have kind of thought or, you know, established of what it might look like to get the change that you guys are looking for?
We're hoping that it's going to happen. It's been a long fought campaign, not by just IFOR, but of a number of groups. And we're part of an alliance called Places You Love, which basically is like, let's save the places we all love. Otherwise, we're going to lose them. So the piece of legislation that we're talking about that hasn't been working, it's called the Environmental Biodiversity and Protection Act. And we want to basically get rid of that because it's not doing the job it was designed to do, and replace that with legislation that really works. And that at the moment, that's a work in progress. And we're campaigning for that to be as strong as possible and really have that nature at its core and that mm-hmm. nature positivity.
And to have the resources behind it, because they can write legislation as much as they want, but they need to make sure that it's properly funded so that they actually have the people and the money to make it happen.
Are you guys kind of working hand in hand with lawmakers on this, or is this a campaign that you're just pushing out in hopes that the legislation can change?
Oh, look, it's happening. Yeah. It is happening. Government have listened. We've had a, you know, quite a recent election, a new government. So there is that pledge to do something about it. We just want to make sure that it's going to go far enough, basically, and there's not going to be that compromise and nature loses out.
Yeah. And the Places You Love Alliance that Josie mentioned, the thing that's really cool about it is that it's literally hundreds, I think, of environmental organisations across Australia. So it's literally all the groups that are trying to make this better have come together because we realise how important it is to try and, as like a combined force, make as much impact as we can. So between us all, there's some of us talking directly to government, and we're all collectively trying to raise public awareness about it so that we can make sure that this goes through and is as strong as possible. And the timeline has been delayed, like most things are with the government, but we're hoping at the end of the year we'll see a draft piece of legislation and that can come through and hopefully be passed next year.
Wow. That's honestly a lot sooner than I thought it would be. I feel like if you want to breathe in the United States, or if you even want to take a step onto the beach in California, it takes, you know, 5 years for a 3,000 page bill to be written for no reason. So at least, you know, you guys are looking at the end of the year and maybe pushing the piece of legislation forward next year. That's awesome. And, you know, I'm sure with how desperate the situation is for especially the koala population, that's amazing to hear that it's at least moving forward.
Yeah. Hopefully it's as strong as we want it to be.
That's a great segue. I want to kind of back it up a little bit. It seems like right now there's the perfect storm for koalas, whether it be climate change, deforestation, habitat loss, and just industrialization as a whole. One thing that you mentioned earlier, Dom, was, you know, the fact that chlamydia is prevalent between the koala species. For a lot of viewers out there, I'm sure they didn't know that koalas have chlamydia. Can you kind of jump into, you know, the big development that we talked about earlier, Mount Gilead, correct? And how that forest, that habitat of koalas is, you know, some don't have chlamydia and, you know, some might have to be relocated because of this, you know, development. What type of impact do you see kind of unfolding with these mixtures of koalas from different places because they're, you know, having to relocate their habitat? Is there more chlamydia being passed now that there's less habitat for these koalas? And what does that look like for your organization?
Yeah, that's a big one. I know that where Mount Gilead is and that healthy koala population, they're having to move further down. So there is the risk that they will go eventually into a population that has chlamydia, right?
Yeah, and most koalas do have chlamydia. Not them all have that those signs, but it is very prevalent. And it is a really horrible disease to have, and it can be fatal. And it's a lot like most disease in anyone, it's linked to stress. And, you know, previous research that IFOR has commissioned that shows that land clearing is like the biggest cause of stress in koalas, and that stress is linked to disease. So it's this like death by a thousand cuts kind of thing. It's like they've got everything against them, and chlamydia is just a bit of the, you know, the added horrible disease for them to have to go through. There is a vaccine that has been just introduced we're using at the moment, not us, but our partners are using to vaccinate against the disease. That's a very recent initiative, and we're really hoping that will turn things around. But as we said, that the root cause, we can't just have the vaccination. We have to address that the root cause of why koalas are getting ill and chlamydia and retrovirus in the first place. It all comes down to saving their habitat. You know, cutting down one tree can mean life or death for koalas, and then, you know, saving one tree can be a lifeline, and planting one likewise. So, the aim is to keep that population intact and healthy. They're really up against it at the moment, and they're obviously particularly susceptible to fires as well.
After the Black Summer bushfires, we went into 3 years of La Nina, which is our rainy period, which brought a lot of floods, a lot of rain, but that also meant a lot of fuel on the ground. Everything has grown tremendously. And this year is the first year where we are now out of that period, and everything is getting super dry because it's been unseasonably warm during winter. So every day I feel like we are getting media warnings about it's going to be a bad bushfire season, prepare, all that again. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the black, like as catastrophic as the Black Summer, but there's definitely, it's going to be the worst one we've had since then. And any kind of fire is a risk at this point to our wildlife, especially koalas, given we lost so many in the Black Summers, and then they've had 3 years of torrential floods, and now we're going basically back-to-back disasters, and it's just not giving any animal enough time to recover, or the habitat either. So that's a real concern, and is something that we've been focusing on a lot with our disaster preparedness work. So we have been reaching out to koala hospitals, rescue groups, other wildlife rescue groups across the country to just make sure they've got plans, because a lot of the issues last time, not issues, but because we weren't expecting such a catastrophic season, a lot of people weren't prepared. And so people that have wildlife carers that have koalas or kangaroos or wombats in care, they didn't know what to do. And it's, you can't just put a kangaroo in your ute like you would a dog to evacuate. It's a logistical thing that you've got to work out. So we've been working with them to get those plans in place so that should it happen again, they can evacuate early and they're prepared and they know what to do.
That's awesome. You know, working with state and local government and, you know, the rescue teams that are out there, you know, now having gone through it, you know, being able to build a plan hopefully will bring great prevention to loss of life going forward.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah. And that was one of the only real silver linings that came out of that, those bushfires, because there was that international spotlight on Australia and our wildlife. And we definitely learned, you know, it blindsided us all, and we've learned a lot. And there has been, you know, government have actually finally been building, you know, wildlife preparedness into their planning. So, but, you know, a lot of communities and wildlife have only just started to recover from the last fires. So and then they were hit by floods. So it's just been this like cumulative.
Relentless.
Relentless, really. So, we're sort of bracing ourselves for this. As Dom says, I really hope it's not going to be as bad as some predict. But, the more prepared everyone can be, the easier it will be, because we can't just focus all our efforts on response. We have to have those plans in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great point, to be prepared and have that action plan for, a disaster that might be just right around the corner. And that's something that we've been seeing for a lot of our land-based episodes that we've had, is the recurring theme of rescue, rehab, and release. To be able to respond, like you said, to a situation and rescue, koalas, and then to bring them in logistically to wherever you keep them and rehab them. And the plan and aim is to, release them healthily back into a healthy environment, healthy habitat. I'm sure that process is not just, cut and dry, black and white. There's so much gray area that you must, trek through to get that successfully done. It's a great way for us to move kind of into the next topic of your current projects. And something that we took note of in our discovery call was the Two Thumbs Sanctuary. Can you kind of jump into, what that entails?
Yeah, sure. So Two Thumbs Wildlife Sanctuary is a sanctuary which is near Canberra, our capital city, so in the Snowy Mountains district. So almost 4 years ago, on January the 23rd, to be precise, that sanctuary was burnt to the ground. James Fitzgerald, the owner of that sanctuary, the fires had been raging for weeks around that. He's actually a volunteer firefighter himself, and he had evacuated his house and his animals and was basically been given the all clear and moved back to his house, and was on the day of the fire was actually out taking a koala to the vet. And sadly, the winds changed and that fire raged towards his sanctuary, and it happened so quickly that it destroyed his house, his whole sanctuary, and all the the rehab facilities that he had there and the animals in them. So just like totally unthinkable. And in a double tragedy, we had a firefighter, a water tanker airplane that crashed on a neighboring property while trying to, dropping fire retardant on that property, killing all three US firefighters in that. So there was this like tragedy upon tragedy that that has impacted that sanctuary. And James is trying to rebuild and to make that that sacrifice mean something, and I4 is helping him to do that. Just after the fires, we deployed Bear to go down and help look for koalas, because just some sign of life or some glimmer of hope that we wanted to bring to James, and Bear helped find about 15 koalas, a lot of which were, who were brought into care, into rehab, given that vet treatment. In one in particular was one koala called Jesse and Amelia, a mum and Joey that were rescued. And it was really touch and go because they were in such bad condition. And while she was in care, she actually found out she was pregnant with another Joey. So in reality, Bear saved those three koalas that were able to be released back into the wild. James also named three of those rescue koalas after the firefighters who died as well. So that's coming up to the fourth anniversary in January. And we've been helping really get that sanctuary back to its former glory. We did that initial rescue phase and the rehabilitation and the release. And now we're working on recovery. There were thousands of trees destroyed and a lot of you know, tree dwelling, hollow dwelling animals were left homeless. And as you probably know, you know, hollows, natural hollows in trees take 100 up to 200 years to form, and wildlife can't wait that long. So we've been working with a group called Habitat Innovation and Management here that have designed these innovative nest boxes, and they mimic natural hollows in trees. So there are lots of nest boxes on the market, mainly made of timber, but these are actually built to be much longer lasting and durable. They can last, you know, over 50 years and be heat resistant and mimic natural hollows, so they're warmer in winter and cooler in summer, and yeah, provide homes for wildlife. We've even got some 2-bedroom homes that we've been installed as well. So non-competing species can live there. And we're seeing, you know, putting in nest boxes, and already we've seen animals, birds and possums,
gliders
move into those homes. So yeah, providing homes for wildlife. We're out in on Two Thumbs next month. We'll be working on the ground literally by installing these revolutionary new quoll dens, so marsupial dens for sort of ground dwelling animals, because not only were the trees destroyed, but the ground was obliterated too. So we're going to be installing 20 of those, and also some raptor nesting platforms that would have been would have vanished during the fires as well, and planting trees.
Yes. It's all about, giving, I guess, nature that helping hand to bounce back, so that it can bounce back a bit quicker and wildlife can start returning and, have more of a suitable environment to thrive in, hopefully. I've only been there, I think, 3 times, and I wasn't there directly after the fires, but just in the times that I've been, every time I've gone, it's greener. It's louder, so you can hear more birds, you can hear more insects, so you can hear wildlife starting to return, which is really promising.
So is this just like an open sanctuary, where there's a lack of buildings, or is it a sanctuary that's kind of a combination of open greenery areas with rehabilitation centers, or what is this place like?
It's mainly bush. It's mainly bush. And obviously there were buildings on that before the fires. James actually had his house there and some rehab facilities. So the first thing he did was rebuild the rehab facilities. He's moved into a shipping container, and he's built these state-of-the-art rehab facilities so he could help the koalas. And that's just sums James up, actually, just putting
it's incredible.
Putting wildlife, you know, first. That was the first thing he wanted to do, rather than rebuild his own house. He actually camped out in the bush for weeks after that, and the first structures that were put up were the koala and wildlife rehab structures. So that just says a lot about who he is as a person, just completely selfless, so dedicated to protecting their wildlife and finding homes for them. So yeah, so we just wanted to do a little bit to help him do that, and to get him back on track. And he has big plans to bring that sanctuary back to life, because it is just this, it was an intact piece of land that provided such an important habitat for so many species that we have to do all we can to bring that back from the brink.
That's badass. James, if you end up listening to this, we appreciate you. That is amazing. I couldn't imagine losing everything and in the subsequent weeks camping and putting the wildlife first priority wise. That's incredible. You're a badass if you're listening.
Yes.
Well, that's incredible. I think, you know, it's examples like that, you know, like the pioneers that, you know, create that that lane of selflessness. You know, in terms of, you know, like you said, helping wildlife and giving these koalas, and not only koalas, but every, you know, living, you know, species to that area, a helping hand to rebuild. I like how you said the 2-bedroom, you know, like a 2-bedroom.
We brainstormed that a lot when we were there. We're like, how do we explain this to normal people?
It's like a 2-bedroom apartment, co-living.
It's so catchy though, because, you know, that 2-bedroom talk is like, you know, well, for this price, not only can koalas live here.
Exactly.
So
We actually designed a bit of a real estate advert, trying to encourage, you know,
the media, to pick,
media to pick it up. But
oh man, we're going to have to link that. I need to see that.
We can send it to you.
Well, that's amazing. It sounds like, you know, there's so much to focus on and so much at your fingertips that's just right there, despite how much turmoil and disasters happen, because we don't see a lot here in the States in terms of media exposure of what is going on where you are. So to hear it firsthand and to see your experiences and to hear your stories is, you know, it helps me as a viewer and an audience member as well gain some insight on what you do day in and day out and what you fight to protect, which is a great point to move into our favorite part of the show and, you know, kind of tell the audience and lift the mood a little bit, although it's been a pretty high mood so far. Is there any wild stories that you may or may not have told the public that you would want to share with the audience? And you could take these separately or together.
However you want to do it.
We both have our own stories. They're both very different.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I'll go. I'm not sure how wild it is, but...
Do you want a drum roll?
Drum roll, please. Yes. As you can see, I kind of like dressing up as animals.
Sure, let's go with that.
perfect intro.
And back in the UK when we was working on the fox hunting campaign, we had these awesome costumes. They're actually designed, do you know Spitting Image, the UK political satire show, when they made those amazing puppets?
No, I've never heard of that. You'll have to fill us in on that.
The guy who designed these costumes, I will send you a photo so you can demonstrate what it looks like. But this is awesome fox costume, and I spent a lot of time in that fox costume because I just I love dressing up as a fox. And we also had a stag and a hare and a hare costume too. So it was during the premiere of Fantastic Mr. Fox. Remember when that came out? I can't remember what year it was now, but George Clooney coming to London, premiere. So I thought, oh, what a perfect opportunity for me to don my fox costume. And I had this like big butt and a fluffy tail and just really super cute. And I had a little placard called saying Kiss Me George on it. And so we hang out by the premiere where this was happening. And suddenly we noticed that the security kind of like clocked us and were like, what's going on here? Thinking that I was some crazy. I'm obviously not, you know. And they actually changed. That was me hoping I would get, you know, a kiss from George. And they actually changed his route to avoid me.
I don't know why.
Yeah, why would they do that?
Why would they do that?
Why would George want to avoid a fox with a big butt?
I know, right? So we completely missed our meeting, and one of those sliding doors moments. And then so I was very dejected, but my consolation prize was Peter Andre at the end of the night. I spoke to him, and I'm not sure whether you guys know who he is, but he's not George Clooney.
That's it.
He did give me a stroke on the nose, so
He pet the fox.
You got petted.
No, sorry.
You can Google him.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, we'll just say that it was George's security that made the choice for the reroute, not George himself.
It wasn't exactly. George. No, yeah. George, you I could tell.
No idea.
By looking at him, he wanted to come and see me. I could tell. But it wasn't his.
We're going to tag George Clooney in these social clips. That's a great story.
I know Dom's ready.
Mine's long because it goes back to my childhood.
How long have you got?
Did we just become therapists?
This is now therapy, group therapy.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So I'm terrified of birds, which I know is odd for somebody that works for a wildlife charity. The reason I'm terrified is when I was like three and small and cute and thinking the world is a great place, I was running around in the park all innocent and my dad was there with me. But then all of a sudden these magpies turned around and magpies, do you have magpies in America? Is that a thing?
What the hell are magpies?
They magpies? Are they like
Google them, they're terrifying.
Big flappy birds.
It's a big flappy and bird they and they swoop. They like literally will attack you. There are articles where they attack children. So they're terrifying. And anyway, so there was two
like
of them.
Hitchcock style.
And I literally have nightmares. I was running around and then they just like came in and started chasing me. So I'm like running with my little legs and my dad's just laughing because he thinks it's funny. And since then I cross the road if I see a bird. That's how terrified I am of it. So it stuck with me forever. And then 2 years into my job here, our social team said, we want to do our first ever global TikTok live. And we want you to do it at a wildlife sanctuary that we partner with in Tasmania called Bonnerong. And I was like, absolutely, I can do this. It'll be fun. Never done a TikTok live before in my life, but I was like, what could go wrong? So I go down. It's great. We're having a great time. I get a text message saying the vice president of comms is watching, so make sure you don't stuff up. And I was like, all right, no pressure. I've got this. So there I am. It's freezing because Tassie is cold. So my hands are like shaking, but we start, we go see some cute kangaroos. We see some cute wombats. Then they take me into a bird aviary and I'm like, okay, stay calm. Maybe the birds won't notice you. And at this point, there's like 500,000 people watching the bloody TikTok live. So I can't do anything. I can't say anything. I can't swear. My VP of comms is watching. I can't do anything. So I'm just like, just be calm, Dom. Maybe they won't sense your fear. So I'm there. I'm filming. And then this massive freaking cockatoo lands on my fucking head. And I...
Use her head as a perch.
And all you can hear, this is probably the proudest moment of my life, because all you can hear is me go, well, there's a bird on my head now. And inside I'm like, holy, get it off. And
she did incredibly. Yeah. You would not know. I knew watching how terrified she would be inside, but to the new observer, no one would have known. She
nailed it.
Amazing.
I nailed it. It hasn't overcome my fear. I'm still terrified.
So she's our
of
official bird reporter.
I know my really right afterwards.
So did the VP of comms comment to you?
She said it was incredible and I did a great job. And I was like, well, I better have because I died because it was on my head.
I can't keep it together. I'm sorry.
And then the head keeper found out I was scared. And after the video, he was like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. And I'm like, it's fine. It's happened. I dealt with it. But I would never do it again.
That's the prank against you now. When we come to Australia, we'll know how to prank you. I'm gonna show up in a big bird outfit. I'll be Big Bird. We'll go to parties and we'll find George Clooney. We'll find George
Just
Clooney.
A special place.
I was not expecting that story, Dom. That's it. That's a good. I mean, both stories amazing. This is why we do the show. We want to know these things.
I'm glad I could. I'm glad I'm over the trauma.
Yeah,
now
it's been therapeutic.
I feel so bad that I'm laughing at your trauma.
Yeah. What is therapy?
So many people did. So it's
Schadenfreude.
So what do therapists say? So Dom, let's unpack that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Why did you feel that way? I don't know, because there was a massive animal on my head that flaps its wings.
Because I was chased as a child and my dad thought it was fucking funny.
I blame my dad. Dad, if you're listening, this is your
Yeah, I blame him.
I'm grateful that you were able to set the context for us from the 3-year-old childhood story all the way up into 2 years of your career at iFall.
Yeah, it's been a lifelong thing for me.
Without the context, we'd be like, okay, great. So a bird landed on your head and you were scared of it. But
yeah, 500,000 people saw that. Psh, oh, yeah. Well, let's tie some trauma to it. Now it's a damn story. Oh, man, that was a good one. Holy shit. I'm still wiping tears.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so thank you at the expense of Dom. We've got some good laughs.
I'm glad it's of use to other people.
Now I want to name the episode Holy Fucking Fuck.
Yep. That's what our TikTok should have been called instead of Wake Up with Bonarong.
Holy Fucking Fuck. Oh, shit.
For fuck's sake. For fuck's sake, yeah.
Oh, we could do that for fuck's sake.
For fuck's sake. That might be it there.
The episode name is For Fuck's Sake, but we're talking about koalas and birds.
Yeah. Don't get confused.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about foxes in Australia.
No.
Whole different ball game, foxes in Australia. Because the Brits brought foxes over here to hunt, because that's what some Brits like doing. And so now they've, you know, created a massive problem here for the wildlife, because they're not native. So again, humans have buggered things up again by introducing animals where they shouldn't be. So it's not the fox's fault. It's the humans' fault, but it has caused a massive issue here. So, which took me a bit of a while to get my head around, because I love foxes, and in the UK they're native, so most people love them, apart from those ones who want to hunt them.
It's incredible how decisions like that can make such long-term impact. I mean, you think about it, it's just one person who is like, damn, I really want some foxes in Australia. And then out of a sudden, now you have a population problem that's affecting different species.
Yeah, I think that running theme happens here too in Florida. There's been anacondas released, all different types of...
Yeah.
All different types of animals that should not
people
be here.
People keeping wildlife as pets that they shouldn't be where they are. And
same with tigers. There are more tigers in captivity in Texas alone, in Florida alone, than there are in the wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another issue that I4 works on. And that could be another podcast episode.
Yes.
I won't lie. I will be completely transparent here, and I'll take all the hate that's well deserved.
Tiger.
No, I never bought it. Where the fuck would I put a tiger?
Where's he gonna put a tiger?
I did at one point pitch the idea of wanting to own a kangaroo at some point. I love animals. I love all types of animals. I would love, you know, to be able to take care of different types of animals. And I won't lie, I did pitch that at one point. And I went so far as to look at the state rules in the United States of what you can and can't own without a permit, just to see. And I promise that's where the story is going. And the U.S. does have states that don't have permitting rules for exotic wild animals, such as, you know, koalas, tigers, things like that. There are states. Now, California, where I'm at, they have a rule for fucking everything. So you're definitely not going to own a kangaroo in California. But there are other states, you know, I think Nevada might be one of them. I could be completely off base on that. It's been probably 4 or 5 years since I looked it up, so I'm sure the rules have changed. But there are states that do allow for that. And I do know some of it is used, you know, for personal recreation. You know, some people just got too much damn money. You know, if they want to go own a tiger, you know, they're going to, you know, charter a team, get a shipping container, and ship whatever animal back over. And, you know, do what they may. But I do know there are some organizations that actually leverage that ruling to be able to create refuges at first. So I think that's why there's kind of internal back and forth about, you know, the rules, because you can't really start, you know, a wildlife refuge without having the wildlife there. And I know that there are some organizations that have used that kind of as a springboard. I know that there are, you know, activists on both sides of that coin of like, oh, you know, this shouldn't be a thing, and it shouldn't, you know, the animal's not in its proper climate, you know, not in its, you know, proper habitat. And, you know, some people just throw it in a backyard, and that's not right. But there are people who are using it for, you know, good purposes. So, you know, to tie it back into kind of the legislation thing we were talking about earlier. I think providing avenues for organizations that are doing the right thing with maybe the wrong rules is an important piece to pushing the legislation forward, you know, kind of for you guys, is making sure that, you know, the groups like yourself and is it save the places or save my places or something like that you guys said?
Places we love.
Places we love, you know, allowing for organizations like that to take existing legislative rules and, you know, move forward in the correct way. So we're really hoping that, you know, a show like this can help you guys move with that and get to the point where koalas are no longer endangered anymore. The ticker's going back the other way, but still send the money though.
That's our hope.
That's our dream. Absolutely.
Right. Perfect way for us to kind of get into the wrap of the show. What's a good way for, you know, the audience members to connect with IFAW Australia, whether it be social media, to volunteer? What's a good way for them to reach out?
To donate?
We will take donations.
So yeah, our website is ifaw.org. We are on TikTok.
We are
on Instagram and Facebook
and Twitter, which is now X, and we are also on Threads now. We're on all of them. So give us a follow, give us a like, and you can see all the cool stuff we get up to.
And give them a dollar.
And yeah, head over. Yep, that's what you can do on the website.
That helps. And also check out Bear's Instagram, Bear the Koala Dog.
And if you are interested in learning more about those laws we spoke about, they're on our website under the take action or get involved part. And there's a petition on there. It'd be great if you guys could sign.
Yeah, we'll share all those profiles for you guys and make sure that, you know, our audience has access to you guys. And we're looking forward to people connecting and learning more about your superhero bear, your legislative movements, and the incredible interest that I'm sure there's going to be in dressing up as animals.
What have I started?
There's going to be some dude in the comment who's like, I am waiting to see this fox.
Yeah, I know.
She's going to end up starting an Only Fox account.
Foxes with big butts.
Oh my god.
Okay, well,
stop there now, probably.
Well, it was great. Oh my goodness. Well, on that note, it was great having you guys on the show. We've had so much fun. I can't wait for people to hear this. And I can't wait to come out and see you guys here in the next little bit. I think we have a lot of work to do, right, Koji?
That's right.
We'll keep you busy.
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll be sniffing poo right there with you.
Oh, hell no. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, it's been a great show, like Ethan said. Thank you, Dom and Josie from IFAW Australia. We've really enjoyed this. We can't wait to work with you further. So thank you for coming on today.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.